The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
When you turn on the evening news, do you see what you want to see or what you need to see? Welcome to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. It seems like more often than not, the good news and people that are making it are buried into a two-minute feature piece near the end of the report. What about giving these people and this kind of news a full hour every week? Now, here's your host, Mariana Cacciatore.
Hello and welcome to our show today. We've got author Roger Hoosden with us. He has a new book called Keeping the Faith Without a Religion. In surveys of religious preference, one-fifth of Americans check the word none, and 37% of that one-fifth say they are spiritual but not religious. Polls show that this is a growing trend, and today we're going to have a conversation about the rise in something Roger calls secular spirituality. Roger Hoosden is the author of 20 books on poetry, art, and pilgrimage, including the best-selling 10 Poems to Change Your Life series. His work has been featured in O, the Oprah magazine, the New York Times, and the Huffington Post. He holds writing classes here in Marin County and online as well on a variety of themes and offers a free weekly poem to his mailing list at rogerhoosden.com. That's rogerhoosden.com. Keeping the Faith Without a Religion will be published in March with Sounds True Publishing. Good morning, Roger. So glad to have you on the show.
Good morning to you, Mariana.
Great. Let's begin with your definition of what it means to be spiritual but not religious.
Yes, it's a really hot theme or question at the moment because so many people, of course, are leaving religion. And as you say, so many people call themselves spiritual but not religious. And I think it points to a difference between faith and belief. And faith, I would say, is a non-rational intuition of the truth, which doesn't need any kind of external belief to support it. It's something that is known in the heart for no reason, really. Whereas belief comes from the Latin opinare or opinare, which means originally meant opinion. So belief has something to do with having a concept or opinion that was drawn from your cultural context or your family context and that you've come to identify with as your own. Whereas faith comes less from the outside than from the inside.
So in belief, many of our beliefs, particularly about the spiritual life, perhaps came to us from our religion, from people associated with our religion. Were you ever a religious person?
I would say probably not. I was in the choir in England, in the Anglican church. I mean, the vast majority of people who go to any kind of religious service in England are in the Anglican church. But, you know, I grew up in a very, very secular culture. I mean, Europe in general is far more secular than the United States, and England is one of the most secular of all. I think it's something like only 3% of people go to any church of any kind. So that was the kind of environment I grew up in. So religion, no, never did really play a large, didn't play much of a part at all in my life, other than in a kind of social sense. You know, as I said, when I was a boy, I was in the church choir, but that simply was something you did when you lived in the town.
Mm-hmm, correct. You know, my growing up, it was very religious, strong Catholic family. And in the early days, those masses were done in Latin. So I really could, I didn't know what they were saying, but there was so much ritual. There was kind of an awe and a mystery about it that later changed when things went to English, you know, and I began to be disillusioned. And by the time I was 17, and I went away to college, I stopped going to church. But one of the things that I notice today that I miss a lot is that, and because at Bread for the Journey, we give grants and we're often associated with churches that have a sense of community and doing social good in the world. So there are these two big things that churches offered me that, because I would identify as spiritual but not religious person today, but those things are really missing. Do you feel a longing for community that you have to create yourself or don't? I'm wondering, because perhaps if you didn't have religion, there wasn't something that was, there isn't something that's a longing or a missing in you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. So, no, I wouldn't say that because I didn't have religion, as you put it, there's not a longing in me. And one doesn't need a religion to have a sense of longing. One needs to be human.
Of course.
And, well, I think it's important because I think if all religions were banished, the religious sensibility would still exist,
mm-hmm.
Which we would now tend to call a spiritual sensibility. So community, I think, is something that religion has provided for many people. So, yes, it is that's a natural and really important human need. And I find that in my environment here in Marin, that I have a very strong community, really, of people who may be of various spiritual traditions, but essentially who hold dear the perennial existential questions. What does it mean to be human? What are we doing here? How can we best serve? These kinds of questions, I think, gather together people from different streams. And in terms of social good and social work, I would have thought you were doing that right now with Bread for the Journey, and Bread for the Journey is not a religious organization as far as I know.
It's very true. It is what we do at Bread for the Journey, and it creates a sense of community. But we don't meet in the same way that we met every week at church. You know, we meet once a month and we have some email communication, but there's something about the ritual that went with church and then the time afterwards to spend a little bit of time and then the ongoing commitment to doing whatever it was that that church did. And so that was all I was talking about. We don't need to really belabor that subject. I just wanted to touch on it. In the introduction to your book, you write about individuation, and maybe you can talk a little bit about what it is and what does it have to do with this idea of spiritual but not religious.
Yes, I think that's an important point to raise, really, and I would also raise the question of the difference between individuation and individualism. Because we do live in a culture which traditionally has favored individualism. And for me, anyway, that word means doing whatever you can to pursue your own happiness, regardless of anyone else's, essentially. Whereas individuation, I think, has more to do with a conscious wish to develop one's own relationship to one's own inner core. So it's an interior, internal process. And yet within that process, one, I think, starts naturally to become aware of the way in which one is connected to everyone else. And so I think individuation, which really means maturing as an individual human being in your own right, standing on your own feet, really becoming your own person as you were meant to be. As one does that through life, I think one extends out beyond mere individualism, the mere concern for oneself, to a broader sense of responsibility for both the culture and the world at large.
Yes, I would say that that's true. This, in the beginning, I think, in that individuation, the conscious wish to develop one's own relationship with one's own inner core takes you, in a sense, your focus is really on yourself. What is it that you think? How do you begin to identify that still small voice as something more important than just the ego wanting something? It takes a lot of focus towards the inner life. And then at some point, what you realize is that we're all here really to be of service to one another. That it takes us, which is what all of the work here at Bread for the Journey is about. We recognize that there's, something greater than ourselves in the creation of a life well lived, right?
I would say so, yeah. So someone who is following their own path of individuation really is, I think, not so concerned about what they believe or don't believe. I think they're more concerned with how they can connect to what you mentioned as the small voice within, but how can they connect to a world beyond their own ego, to a world of meaning and value, that we, actually, I think everybody, can sense is present even if we're not always in touch with.
Mm-hmm.
The Christian thinker Parker Palmer speaks of habits of the heart,
right?
And I think it's to do with developing habits of the heart that allow us to form that connection with that world of meaning and value that we can sense is there, but we're almost but not quite in touch with all the time.
What are some of those habits of the heart?
What are they? Yes, what are they?
Well, we can imagine, developing a deep sense of trust, I would think,
I think one of the first things is something that I find very valuable, actually. When I first wake in the morning, is even as I'm walking to the bathroom, really I'm hardly awake, is internally, without even the words, but internally, what is my intention for today, and how can I best express the values that I say I hold dear? How can I align myself today with the values that I give lip service to? How can I actually, in some way, embody those today?
Right.
So connecting with intention, I think, is certainly for me, a useful habit of the heart. It's also very useful, of course, to sit down for a period of time, whatever time it may be, and rest in quiet,
right?
Which people sometimes call meditation.
Right.
But it doesn't even need to be called meditation. But simply what it used to be called in Christianity was a period of recollection or a period of remembrance. And not remembrance in the sense of trying to think, that is trying to remember, but really, again, collecting oneself in a period of quiet, so that one literally does become integrated, embodied in that moment. The word remember is to bring our members together, to remember, to recollect, is collect ourselves together again. You know, periods of silence can help us do that.
And I think, for me anyway, doing it in the morning is a kind of way of bridging that sleep state to my waking state with something that that connects me to my heart, as you would say.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then through the day, you know, there are certain qualities or values that are an expression of that. So gratitude is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to remember in any situation that we happen to be in that this is where our life has brought us.
Right.
So this is where we are now. So there's something here for us to be grateful for.
Mm-hmm. I would say we're going to take a break in a moment, but I would add to that sort of connecting with generosity. You know, my focus so many years here at Bread for the Journey has been around generosity, and I feel as though not only is it a natural inclination, but it's also something we have to be awake to and to reinvigorate all the time, to connect with how is it in this moment I can be most generous.
And that immediately extends us beyond ourselves.
That's right.
Which is what we were speaking of when
That's
we were
exactly
speaking of individuation.
Exactly right. So we're going to stop here and take a break. It's been wonderful. And so to our listening audience, stay with us. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite, live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Living your best life isn't just about fitness and health. It's also about living a better life emotionally and creating balance. You know where you want to be, but what steps do you take to get there? Listen to Good Health for a Great Life with host Rick Barnabo. We'll bring you guest experts and tools to help you connect the dots from who and where you are to who and where you want to be. It's time to take responsibility for your life. Listen every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, Ordinary People Doing Extraordinary Deeds, with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking to Roger Houston about his newest book, Keeping the Faith Without a Religion. Roger, there's a quote in your book where you say, we can sense that life is an unfathomable mystery. And, you know, early on we talked about having faith, that the difference, you know, between a secular spirituality and religion is faith, the difference between faith and belief. So, you know, with this unfathomable mystery, what is it that we actually have faith in?
I love that question because it's so, we so normally say, well, what do you have faith in? Well, I have faith in this particular person, or faith in this particular idea or way of seeing, all of which is of value. But I think the faith that I'm pointing to is a faith for no reason. In other words, it doesn't need a faith in some exterior object. It's a condition of faith. So it's not rational. It's beyond the usual binary reactions, you know, good, bad, right, wrong. But it's not passive. Faith is not passive or fatalistic. It's engaged with and yet accepting of life's twists and turns. That's how I see it, really. And whatever the faith may extend into in terms of object, for example, it may or may not include the sense of a personal God or an afterlife. But whatever form its convictions take, they're the fruit of intuition or, you know, interior experience, not of received belief. So I would call it that, faith as the knowing heart, really, that just knows for no reason. And that is something I think that at times we all know in our own lives. There's those wonderful lines in the poem The Journey by Mary Oliver, which begins, one day you finally knew what you had to do and began. That kind of knowing, you know, which springs almost apparently out of nowhere, where there's no question and there's no looking back. That kind of knowing is from the knowing heart.
Do you think you always had that, or is that something that has developed over years with study of this secular spirituality, we call it?
I think we've always, we all of us have always had that, because I think it's intrinsic to being human. However, I, and maybe most of us, but certainly I, have often not listened to that. And for various reasons, it may seem more rational to go another way than the way that faith is prompting me to go. I may be afraid. Because very often, faith is prompting me in a direction that I have no knowledge of, which I have no knowledge of the outcome. So there's some sense of unknowing that is present in faith. One has to put one foot in front of the other without being absolutely clear and sure that this is, that it's all going to end as you may want it to, because it may not.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of my teachers is Pema Chodron, and, you know, she talks a lot about there is no ground beneath our feet. It's a phrase she uses often, that you know, as the Buddha would say, there are 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. And, you know, others have said this world is a great mystery. So this sense of faith is a faith in a sense, you know, it's a faith in mystery.
It's a faith in this incredible mystery that you and I are living in this very moment. Not mystery is some kind of thing elsewhere, or right, some idea of mystery, but no, just this very moment of me sitting here speaking with you is itself, you know, full of unknowing, essentially, and it's something we can't just tie up in a neat bow of explanation. We can't tie our lives up in a neat bow of explanation, you know. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, there's a sense, I think, in faith of wonder and awe, and yet wonder and awe toward what? Well, in secular spirituality, I think it means wonder and awe towards this moment and bowing, actually, a feeling of bowing not to any god or deity, but again, stealing from a poem, you know, Merwin writes in one of his, he's got a wonderful line in one of his poems in which he says, "I'm bowing not knowing to what." Mm-hmm. And there's something about that, you know, that there is a, when one feels that mystery of this life and of this moment, there is a sense of awe that at times makes me want to bow my head, you know, but to what? Well, to this.
Right. When we think of faith, you know, we tend to want to, you know, sort of say, I have faith that God has my back, or something like that, you know, where we think that faith is in something that is going to make sure good things happen and protect us from bad things happening. And, you know, in my exploration in these last 30 years and my own personal experiences of life, I've had to come to this complete understanding that hard things or difficult things have built into them the possibility of great goodness. And so my faith today doesn't exclude I might say or feel as though I have, as though spirit in some way, you know, is protecting me or holding me in some light, but not to keep me away from the hard things that happen in the world, but that as I experience them, should I experience them, I can have my heart break open into something greater. It becomes an evolution experience.
Yeah, I'd say I agree that, you know, that faith itself is something beyond light and dark, good and bad, right and wrong. Ultimately, standing in faith, we actually, I think, could say only that we do not know what any one single thing is. That we could not ascribe necessarily the attribution of right or wrong or good or bad to the way life is presenting itself to us in this moment. Because the faith itself is in the inherent intelligence, really, in the way in which life is revealing itself to us.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, when we begin, that's how we start, you know, in a sense. You know, we think, I think it's human for us to want, you know, to want good things to happen and to be protected from bad things happening. And part of maturity is coming to understand, really, what I said earlier, that the Buddha said that the world is filled with 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows.
Yes, yes. Excuse me. And those 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows are intimately intertwined with each other.
Right. It's very true. It's very true. So, you tell a story in the book about a man you met in South India named Nanagaru.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if perhaps you can tell that story and then let's talk about it.
Yes. Nanagaru was, or is, a farmer in Andhra Pradesh, which is South India. And the story he told me of his life went like this. he was being a farmer, you know, and doing his farming life. And one night he had a dream. It was more of a vision than a dream, of a man's face with very large eyes just gazing at him. And he woke up in the middle of the night, really with warmth pouring through his body. But he didn't know what that was. He didn't recognize the person in the dream. But then a few days later, he was looking at the newspaper in Andhra Pradesh, and there was a photograph of the very face that he'd seen. And there was an article about the man whose name was Ramana Maharshi. He'd never heard of Ramana, but he saw that this person who recently died or not, hadn't died too long ago had an ashram somewhere not too far from where he lived, a couple of hundred miles, which isn't too far in India. And so he decided to go to the ashram of Ramana to really just to follow this sense that this person was trying to say something to him in his dream or communicate to him. He didn't know what it was. He did know that he needed to go to the ashram. So he went. And the very first night in the ashram, as he lay in bed, almost on the edge of sleep, he literally felt his consciousness descend from his head down into his heart, like a stream of water almost, where his sense of self descended from the head down into the heart. And from that moment on, his entire life changed. He was permeated with silence. He felt the most profound connection with this person, this teacher, Ramana. And quite instinctively and naturally, he began, without really saying much, just by sitting there, began to attract people around him. So when I met him, and I did meet him in the ashram of Ramana Maharshi in Tiruvannamalai in India, he was just sitting in a courtyard, and there were maybe 100 people just sitting there with him. Now, I had at that time no more interest in seeing any more wise people at all. I'd already seen enough. I was traveling through India, writing a book about India, and I'd been in India several months. And here was yet one more person. I had to pass through that courtyard to get to my room. So I thought, oh, okay, so I'll just sit here for a moment, you know. So I sat down for a moment. And he turned and just looked at me with this beaming smile and didn't take his eyes off me. And I felt that silence completely take me over. And every thought in my mind disappeared. And I don't know how long I was there, maybe half an hour or so. But in that time, not a single thought entered my mind. And clearly this was in the being in the presence of this person. So that was my first meeting with Nanagaru.
So I just got a notice that we need to take a break. So when we come back, what we'll do is talk a little bit about that experience, that transcendent experience, and what that did for you, and what it can do for us, just even hearing this story. So to our listening audience, stay with us, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Have you been struggling to rediscover your sexual life? How do relationships really work? Are there some topics that should be off the table? Listen for Love, Sex, and Communication with host Reverend Dr. Stuart Block Dr. Block has spent decades helping adults to have more pleasure, satisfaction, and higher levels of communication. It can mean more pleasurable, caring relationships. Love, Sex, and Communication can be heard live every Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
When you think of museums, what comes to mind? Is it ancient history? Rotating displays of collections? Are they nice places to visit? Or are they essential to our cities and society? Listen for Museum Life with host Carol Bossert. We'll discuss what the attraction is and historical importance of museums and what they contribute to the economic makeup of our cities and country. Museum Life can be heard live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Are you a single parent trying to create the balance between home life and work life? You may be running a successful business, but how are your relationships with your family and children? If you're one of the thousands of people trying to juggle it all, tune in to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris is the portrait of the success story. Coming to the U.S. with no language skills, founding and growing several businesses while raising his daughter from age 7 to adulthood as a single dad. Listen every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Bread for the Journey, ordinary people doing extraordinary deeds with your host, Mariana Cacciatore. If you have a question or comment about the program, or have an idea for a person you would like featured on a future program, please send an email to bfjradio@gmail.com. That's bfjradio@gmail.com. And now, back to Bread for the Journey.
Welcome back, and we're here talking with Roger Houston about his new book, Keeping the Faith Without a Religion. So before we took a break, you talked about this experience of meeting Nanagaru. And in the book, I'm going to quote something you said at the end of that story. Quote, "But if there is one thing that can ring true when the person is present, it is the feel of the air in the room. The person speaks or remains silent, and you feel clarified, more alive, as if in an extra burst of oxygen has slipped through a crack in the window. That extra oxygen is tangible, is a tangible presence. You can taste it on the tongue, feel it in your body, know it in your heart. This is what I felt in the presence of Nanagaru." So, you know, I don't think you have to travel to India to have experiences like this. Sometimes we have them, you know, in a hike in nature, awakening, you know, as we look at an orchid or an iris. It can happen.
Looking in your lover's eyes.
That's right. That's right. But let's talk a little bit about this as it relates to this becoming a spiritual person without a religion.
I think we're talking here, when we're speaking of that kind of silence, it's not necessarily a silence meaning without any words, but that you feel in the presence of someone like that, or you feel yourself when you yourself have an experience of this kind. A silence almost in the body that somehow paradoxically makes you feel more embodied, this as if you have weight. So many of us for so much of the day are running through the day in our minds and from our minds. So the center of consciousness, if you like, the center, the operations room is in the just behind the eyes, in the frontal cortex. And so, you know, there, and it's useful because that's the strategizing mind. We're strategizing what to do next, where to go next, who to see next. All of that has its value. But what happened for Nanagara and what happened for me when I was in his presence, and by the way, as you say rightly, that can happen in all kinds of contexts. What happened for me was that I dropped out of the operations room in behind my eyes down into what we could call the heart, really the center of the chest. And that's also why I feel more embodied, because I'm more down in the center of my body. When I'm in that dimension of being, if you like, which is just intrinsically human, and has no particular need of any belief system for us to experience. So that dropping down, really in a way, is also dropping down from the realm of belief, which is concept and opinion, which is in the mind, dropping down to the realm of faith, which is a condition of the knowing heart. But paradoxically, that knowing heart also lives in unknowing because it's not strategizing what the next move is.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next move happens organically of its own accord, mm-hmm. without strategy. That's a kind of indication of being down more in the body. You know, the etymology of the word guru has in it, guru comes from a word meaning heavy, weight. So there's something about wisdom giving weight to a person, that they are actually not out of their body, not transcendent in some other domain, but on the contrary, more deeply here in their body where they already are.
As you say, when you've dropped down into the heart, you're more embodied.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about, yeah.
Completely, yes. Yes. Yes.
So, when I have had experiences like this, one of the things that happens for me is that I feel my, and almost see my connection to all beings, all living things on the planet. Like, it's almost as though there are connecting energy lines. I can feel the suffering of another person, not to lose myself in it, but I can feel it. And in a sense, again, getting back to this whole, you know, bread for the journey and being about generosity, and that really is who sponsors this radio show, I feel as though in a sense, the purpose, it's funny to say the purpose, but the place where I come to is always the connection with all living things, and how is it that we can best serve. Do you think in a sense that that's the purpose of this? Or is there even a purpose to it?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought in that last question. No, I would say it's just because. No, I don't think there's a purpose. I don't think we're here to serve. We're here to be fully as and who we are, which, of course, may indeed be an expression of that, may indeed be service, but not as an idea or something that one is meant to do, but as a spontaneous gesture.
So, thank you. Appreciate that. There are 7 chapters in your book, the chapter titles that begin with the word trust. Trust the mystery, trust the joy, trust the imperfections. And then there are 3 that begin with keep faith, as in keep faith with beauty, keep faith with kindness and love, keep faith with the human spirit. How about you take this moment to tell us how it is that you organized the book itself and your intent in organizing it this way?
Well, as you say, I think it's 7 of the 10 chapters in the book begin with the word trust.
Right.
So trust the knowing, trust the mystery, trust the dark, trust the imperfections, trust the changes. So trust the joy. So what are we being asked to trust there? Well, we're being asked to trust what is already so. Because if we're human, then we already do live in mystery. We live in a world in which everything is changing. Change is part of human life. Excuse me. We live in a world in which there is darkness. We live in a world in which there is joy. And certainly, we live in a world in which there is imperfection. And when I say world, I don't just mean the external world. I mean ourselves. So my imperfections, my experience of change, I change from moment to moment through an hour. We all know this. So as human beings, we have certain givens of existence. So what I'm saying with these chapter headings is a context for our unfolding and developing of our own spiritual life is the trusting of what we have already been given. We've already got change. We've already have imperfection, etc. And to use those givens of existence as, if you like, the context or the crucible. How do we respond with change when it happens? How do we respond to the fact of our own imperfections and those of others, and to the imperfections of the world? You know, how do we respond to the dark times in our own life and in the world? These are, if you like, the opportunities that life is giving us from moment to moment to see whether we are in the operating room upstairs or whether we're down in the arena of faith, which is in the chest, as we were speaking of before. Moment by moment, life is giving us a litmus test of where we are by how we react, how we are responding to life as it's turning up in this moment. So that's what those chapters are. They're giving us a context within which to taste ourselves, feel ourselves, and how we are in relation to the life we've been given.
Mm-hmm. And this keep faith with beauty, and keep faith with kindness and love, and keep faith with the human spirit. Can you talk a bit about that part of the book?
Yes, beauty is one of the great gateways for us to, certainly for me, but for everyone, in one form or another. Beauty is a gateway to our own deeper beauty, which is our own spiritual dimension here as we are living this life. Beauty opens us beyond our ordinary sense of self. So does kindness and love.
Right.
And when you speak of generosity, of course, that is connected to kindness. Kindness and love open us beyond the ordinary conceptual mind, the operating room. And as we open in that way, then I think we do get a deeper sense of the human spirit itself, not just in ourselves, but in humanity as a whole. And that's not so easy in these times, because we live in a time of 24-hour news cycle. And so we're being bombarded all of the time with how terrible everything is, because it's bad news that sells. not good news. And so the media is constantly pouring a deluge of news that is shocking and frightening and so on and so forth. How can we maintain some sense of the human spirit, the goodness of the human spirit, in the face of that onslaught, the media onslaught of a global community? So that too, I think, keeping faith with the human spirit, is actually really, really important in times like this. And there are many, many voices, of course, that do call us to having faith in the human spirit.
Right. Well, believe it or not, this hour has just slipped by. I just received word we're near the end of our show. Thank you so much. It's been such a great interview, Roger.
Oh, great pleasure.
Yeah. So, to our dear listening audience, this is a lovely book. I hope you will get it, Keeping the Faith Without a Religion. Bread for the Journey is a nonprofit organization. And, of course, as a nonprofit, we could very well use your support. If you find a place in your heart to make a financial contribution, or if you'd like to start a chapter of Bread for the Journey in your town, please go to our website at breadforthejourney.org. If we all pitch in a little bit, we can change the world. And I close today, as I do every show, with this. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings be free.
We hope our program inspired you this week. Please join Mariana Cacciatore for another edition of Bread for the Journey next Saturday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.